Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
It is my privilege to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Leslie Kagan. Leslie Kagan has worked, as many people know, in a wide range of peace and social justice movements nationally and locally for the past 50 years or so, from the Vietnam War to racism to nuclear disarmament to lesbian gay liberation, fighting sexism, opposing U.S. military interventions, leader of United for Peace and Justice for years, and most recently, Leslie was co-coordinator of the People's Climate March on September 21st of this year in New York City, which brought 400,000 people into the streets demanding action on the global climate crisis. Leslie Kagan, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we are very glad to have you here. So what was your role and what are your reflections on this march in New York City and what's going to come next?
Well, let me start with my role. I came into it last spring, I guess it was the end of March or so, about 2 months into the process, and I was brought on to coordinate the logistics, the negotiations with the police department, for the permit and things like that, and all the other logistical details. As things unfolded, though, I took on more and more responsibility, mostly because I have a lot of experience organizing mass mobilizations, big demonstrations, and so it didn't make sense to limit, what the arenas that I could be involved in. So it sort of was a more organic process where I and one other person kind of developed into the roles of co-coordinating the overall march. Again, my primary focus was on the whole negotiations with the city and all the logistical details that make an event like that possible. But as I said, from the minute I got involved, permits and logistics don't mean anything if you don't have people on the street. So the main emphasis of all the work that everybody did was turnout. It was, for those of you who might have been there, I hope you will agree, it was an incredibly powerful day. And it wasn't just because so many people came out, more than we had even anticipated, but it was because of the energy of that day and who was out on the streets. There was a tremendous cross-section of people. And that doesn't just happen, by the way. That was a consciously thought through and implemented organizing plan to turn out people from many communities, and particularly from those communities most directly impacted by the climate crisis or would be impacted in the future, will be impacted in the future. In other words, poorer communities, communities of color, working communities, et cetera, more vulnerable communities. The commitment to reach deep into those communities and the organizations within those communities made a difference in terms of turnout and the energy. The other thing I should just mention about the two other quick things about the day itself was one is there were tremendous numbers of young people. And by young people, I don't just mean college-age people. I mean high school and even younger. There were just a tremendous number of young people at this demonstration, which was very empowering. I think it made everybody feel like there's this great hope for the future. And then the other element of the day, which I think has to be noted, was the art piece of it. There was everything from marching bands to floats to puppets and flags and banners and, of course, T-shirts and posters and chanting and everything else. But the arts element of the day helped communicate both the energy that people brought to the street and also the determination to stay involved, to keep at it, to force, because that's what it seems it's going to take, to force the powers that be to pay serious attention to this climate crisis. We are way beyond the moment where pretty speeches and fancy rhetoric are enough. and by we, I mean the planet, you know, really we're at a point in this climate crisis, and I'm no scientist, I'm no expert, but just as a regular old person who reads the newspapers, it's clear that we're way beyond the point of, you know, niceties. We need to get down to some real changes in policy.
I know that people went from here in Virginia and from all over the place to that march in New York City. I don't know if you know what percentage of participants were from out of town, but how did you go about reaching all of those people? Did you have to raise money? Did you have to hire buses? How could you know who was going to come?
Right. It's one of the challenges, let me put it that way, of organizing a mass march. You don't really know who's coming or where they're coming from. I mean, you have some sense of that before the day, but it's hard to know. And then, of course, with a crowd that big, it's really impossible to know where every person came from. We do know that there were about 500 buses that came in. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but they came literally from all over the country, many of them from campuses. A lot of college groups organized buses to come in. But not only on the campuses. Religious groups did it, labor unions, a whole host of different kinds of groupings. So they came from all around the country. I do think that our sense is that the vast majority of people came from not just the greater metropolitan area of New York City, which of course has a tremendous population base to pull from, but from distances not that far away where people could come in, could drive in or take a bus or a train or however to get to New York City that morning, do the demonstration, and go home that night. It's just a matter of plain geography that you know, it makes sense that the majority of people would come that from that distance is close enough to make the day possible. But people did come from all around the country, and just as importantly, there were demonstrations that weekend and that day, not only around the country, but around the world. More than 2,000 protests and activities happened around the country as part of the People's Climate March, kind of on a global scale.
And this, Leslie Kagan, this march was timed to a meeting at the United Nations on this subject. Did it have any impact on that meeting? And what impact did it have in the media? Do people around the world and around the country and around the New York area know that this happened?
Yes. The demonstration happened. The march was held. We consciously planned it to happen the weekend before a special one-day summit that Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the UN, was convening to coincide with the opening of the General Assembly at the UN. So he was convening a one-day session on a Tuesday, September 23rd, and he invited heads of state from all around the world to come just to talk about the climate crisis. So we decided to do the demonstration on the weekend before. It turned out to be on Sunday, 2 days before the march. And the point of the march and the clear message of the march was that the people of the world want those in power, in this case heads of state, to take action. And it was not a specific detailed point 1, point 2, point 3 policy agenda that we were putting forth. It was more a sound the alarm, call to action. The people of the world are not avoiding or missing the fact that this there is a crisis here. It's not just an important issue. There's a climate crisis that is unfolding and getting worse every day. So we think we had some impact, and it's hard to know. You know, you don't really know until 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road, when you look back and see what kind of impact an event like that had on the powers that be. But what we do know is that, well, two things I should say. One is that no one demonstration changes policies as big and complex as, you know, global dealing with the global climate crisis. That's a long-term, complicated, many-layered process that unfolds. But it is a marking point or a stepping point, you know, in the process of developing a global movement that's strong enough to insist that policies be put into place. Having said that, though, we do know that, first of all, we were in the media for at least 3 days. Well, partially because on the next day, on Monday, there was another demonstration, a complimentary demonstration down at Wall Street, which was addressing the other set of powers that be, that is the corporate powers, that have so much contributed and made the climate crisis what it is today. So it was called Flood Wall Street. So that got another boost of media attention. And then, of course, on Tuesday, when the UN meeting was actually happening, there were constant references back to the march on Sunday. So there were at least, we were in the media cycle for at least 3 days, which is very rare. And most of those stories were actually got the message. They were very clear. They were on point. And they understood what we were trying to communicate. I should say also that one of the most important things about a demonstration like this, and virtually every mass mobilization that I've been involved in over the years, one of the most critical things is what happens to the people who come to the march, and where do they go with the energy that was palpable on the streets of New York? Where do they go once they go home? Do they stay involved? Do people who hadn't been involved get involved, create new organizations, build organizations that already exist, make connections between movements, and in all the different ways that people can and should be involved. And that we're going to, that's certainly something that we'll have to judge down the road when we look back and say, was this indeed a turning point in the strengthening and the deepening of this movement? And I hope it was. I mean, I think the energy of the day led us all to believe that people were so moved that they will go home. And as I said, those people who were already involved would stay involved and be kind of re-energized in that work. And other people who perhaps this is the first time they had stepped out in a public way on this issue would now find some vehicle for their own involvement.
There have been protests this past week at FERC, at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in Washington, nonviolent, disruptive, close the doors and block the building, lock it down protests. There was that smaller protest at Wall Street that you mentioned the next day, and people protesting at the United Nations. But there seems to be this sort of divide between the approved, police-sanctioned, giant public marches and taking the issue directly close to the people in power that you're trying to address for your grievances. And some of the best actions I thought we had when you were working with United for Peace and Justice on anniversaries of the Iraq War in Washington sort of combined the two, a rally in a park with a permit and disrupting the street. And as people in the park notice that nobody's getting arrested for closing the street, they come into the street. And if that march had just sort of accidentally taken a left turn at one point instead of a right turn, it would have gone to the United Nations. What do you think about this sort of divide between these two tactics? Which is more useful? Can they be combined in any way?
Yeah, I don't think it's an either or. I think a movement is strong, and that's true for this movement, but any social progressive social change movement is strong when people are engaged in many tactics, and ideally when those are complementing one another. So, for instance, I think in this instance, the people's march on Sunday, which was designed and projected as a family-friendly event, that we want the people who maybe were nervous about risking the possibility of arrest for any number of reasons. They're here without documents, from other countries. They have elderly parents at home that they need to take care of, or they themselves have physical challenges and disabilities. They have children to take care of. And so all they could do, what made sense to them was to go to a march. Whereas other people, because of the realities of their lives and because of their own consciousness, can take action that would, put them at risk for being arrested and then whatever process, flows out of that. So there was never a conflict between the organizers of the Sunday march and the Monday Flood Wall Street. They were always, I believe, for everybody that I knew that was involved, so we all saw these as complementing one another, not an either or. But again, I think the strength of any movement, or you know you have a strong movement, when people are engaged in everything from writing letters to the editor to visit their representatives in Congress to shutting down the halls of power, be that on Wall Street or government agencies or, you know, wherever it might be, to mass marches, to silent vigils, to, you know, all kinds of creative activities. So it really shouldn't be. It doesn't need to be an either-or. In fact, that's a danger when it becomes an either-or, and as I said, instead of a, you know, each activity, each type of way that people can be engaged adds value to the overall work of the movement.
I think that's very well said, and I personally certainly on some occasions want to do one type and one, and others want to do the other. The other thing that was going on that day, of course, of this big march in New York was that it was the International Day of Peace, and there were peace activities, long-standing annual peace activities planned in places around the world, and some of them incorporated and combined with environmental activities that day because of this this action. But the Pentagon, as you know, is one of our biggest destroyers of the environment, and that tends to be left out of the dialogue among the big environmental groups. And I wonder whether there isn't some way to have something more than an either or, than a both and solution, to combine efforts to save the planet with efforts to save the planet from war. Is there a way, because I know that people personally took their posters and brought that message to New York and handed out flyers and signed people up on clipboards, and you know, we, if we're going to save the planet, we have to stop the wars, and the Pentagon is the biggest consumer of petroleum we've got, and so forth. But I didn't hear that. I've never heard that message coming from our big environmental groups.
Yeah, I think you are absolutely right on both pieces of that. That is that, to me, and to more and more people, the connections are they're right out there. They're crying out to us, you know, make this connection between war and militarism, and the degradation of the planet. And it's both, as you said, you know, the Pentagon, in this country, the Pentagon is the single largest user of fossil fuels. And to say nothing of war itself being bad for the environment, bad for the climate. And then so many of our recent wars, not ours, but the U.S.'s recent wars, have been literally wars for oil or to protect oil or access to oil. So, I mean, that's just one level of it. That, there's so many ways that the fight, the struggle, let me put it that way, the struggle to end war and militarism, and the work to deal with the climate crisis and protect the environment must be linked. The problem is, and I think you're absolutely right in identifying it, is that too many of the players in the environmental climate change movement have not made that connection yet. I think more of the connections are being made from the peace movement end of it, and more of an understanding of how these things are connected are coming out of it, from, as I see it anyway, from the peace movement, the anti-militarism movement, and the environmental movement, the environmental justice movement, the climate change movement hasn't quite gotten it yet. And I say yes, because I haven't given up hope. I think that depends on the work that many of us need to do to help people make those connections, because they are, as I said, crying out to be made. They are so obvious. They're right in front of our face. And I think that, and again, I think we have to understand that the movement dealing with the climate crisis functions like any movement in many different arenas and at many different levels. There are some organizations that are 100 years old that are about, you know, protecting the planet, protecting wildlife. There are other groups, and those are often more mainstream, for lack of a better word, and more rely on lobbying and traditional approaches to how policy gets changed. And then there are other groups that have a different kind of energy, are more willing to take to the streets, including direct action, but also mass marches. So even on the specific set of issues related to the climate crisis, there are different approaches to how the work should unfold. But I think there is an opening there that we have to keep pushing on. I think the environmental and climate change movement needs the peace movement, and the peace movement needs to make that connection on the climate crisis. I think you're absolutely right to raise that.
It seems like you, Leslie Kagan, of all people, as a past national coordinator of United for Peace and Justice, that helped organize the march on February 15th, 2003 in New York, on the single biggest day of public action worldwide in history, could point out to the environmental groups that it can be family-friendly and popular and, in fact, bigger than this climate march was, to oppose wars and militarism, that
yes,
you're not.
And I am trying to do that. I just encourage others to do that too.
Yes, indeed.
This is clearly more than a one-person job to do. But I am trying to speak out and raise those issues. I think I almost feel like it's my responsibility, and for any of us who understand these connections. We have a responsibility to the planet and to not just the planet abstractly, to the human beings that live on the planet, to raise these issues, make these connections, and keep pushing. And, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes people say, no, we don't want to make connections. Let's keep it focused on this set of issues. Complicated enough. Well, yeah, it's complicated, but that's life is complicated.
Yes, indeed. It seems, though, that the environmental movement is in some ways a model for other movements. You mentioned young people. I have not seen kids inspired or engaged by anti-wealth hoarding or anti-war or anything other than climate destruction. They're not kids energized to close prisons or to end any sort of injustice. It's the environmental movement that has captured young people's imagination and created this march that you organized in the absence, really, of a big crisis in the corporate media. I mean, whenever we've had a big anti-war march, it's because there was a big war being proposed. It's not because of the ongoing suicidal disaster of extravagant militarism. We don't seem to be able to generate it ourselves.
We did have the hook, if you will, or the handle of the UN meeting. The fact that heads of state were going to be gathering in New York City, specifically convened to talk about the climate crisis, it made sense then. Well, if they're going to gather, they should hear from people. So that resonated with folks, that we need to gather in New York in large numbers and let those leaders of the world know that the population of the world is not, we're not sitting idly by you. We're not twiddling our thumbs here while they figure things out. We're going to pressure them as much as we can.
Yeah. I think the New York police or the city was recently forced to pay people a bunch of money in compensation for mass arrest during one of these past big marches at the Republican National Convention. Has there been any sort of change in terms of acceptance of mass marches in New York as a result of that?
Well, I think there have been some changes. We'll see over time. Part of the change, probably what happened at the Republican Convention, they were just massive illegal arrests. and people were treated terribly. So even at other times when there have been demonstrations that the police were not exactly friendly toward, they didn't necessarily go that far in the abuses as they did during the Republican Convention. And so I was glad to see that not only that the lawsuit was brought, but then there was a little victory there. There is a major change, of course, in New York City with the election of Bill de Blasio as the mayor and a new police commissioner. And the People's Climate March on December 21st was the first large demonstration since the new administration took office. So, and Actually, it was noticeable to me, because I've negotiated a lot with city officials for big marches in New York City. The dynamic with the police was easier. We didn't get everything we wanted. We wanted to march right through Times Square. We thought that was as the kind of iconic crossroads of the world. We thought, given that this is a global crisis, that marching right through Times Square would be a powerful thing to do. We didn't win that. But we did get a route that we felt was pretty good and took us right past Times Square, right on the edge of Times Square, and allowed us to bring massive numbers of people right into the heart of the city, which is what we really wanted to do. And then many other details had to be worked out, and almost everything we wanted we were able to get and negotiate with the police. So it's hard to know, was it the particulars of this demonstration and the particular dynamic in our negotiations, or how much it had to do with this new administration at City Hall. We hope it has to do with both, and that we hope that there's a new era in New York City with this new administration of a more friendly approach to, as I hear myself say the words, I'm kind of laughing, a friendly approach to our constitutionally protected rights to protest. I mean, we should always be allowed to protest. It's part of our, as I just said, constitutionally protected rights to assemble, to be heard, and to petition our government.
Indeed it is, or it should be. We have 2 minutes left. I'm wondering what you think of this moment we're in now. Shortly after the last midterm elections, we started organizing this Occupy movement and similar movements, and the thinking was that the country wasn't entirely obsessed with an election right then. Here we are after another even worse midterm election, and it looks like a president eager to cooperate on everything bad with a new Republican Congress come January. Are we going to see a new Occupy movement? Do you have any big mobilizations in the works? What's next?
Right. That obviously is the big question. What's next? It's hard to know what's going to be next. It's one of the challenges of being a social change organizer. As well, you know, David, it's hard to predict how people are going to respond to events, both good and bad events, that unfold in our country and in the world. I do believe there's a lot of energy, a lot of creativity, and a lot of young people in motion. So I remain very, very hopeful, not only about this particular set of issues, but around the whole agenda. We are up against tremendously awful people and institutions in the Congress, in the mass mainstream media, in the economic sphere, the corporate sphere, you name it. So the challenges we face are many and big, and we're up against powerful forces. But I remain inspired, especially by the tremendous numbers of young people who came out on the 21st, and I know are going to be the backbone of whatever next wave of activism comes along.
We have been speaking with Leslie Kagan, organizer extraordinaire, most recently co-coordinator of the People's Climate March on September 21st. Leslie, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Sure, thanks for having me.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.